Okay, so today I'm in London with Martin Raymond. Thanks very much, Martin, for
Thanks,
agreeing to
Simon.
talk to us today. Right, how would you describe what you do for a living?
Currently, at the minute, I suppose I've been punting professionally for about 20 years or so, certainly the last 15 years.
Right, now before we get into the nitty-gritty of what you actually do and how you win, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Have you brought up in the game?
I've always been in racing. Years ago, my old man was a jockey, and then I became a jockey's agent for a few sort of some good jockeys. One by one, they all eventually got rid of me. But I suppose my claim to fame would be nicking the Derby winner for Willie Ryan in 1997 on Benny the Dip. I picked that up as a spare ride, so that's one of my good points there.
So what does a jockey's agent actually do?
It's probably a little bit more technical now, but at the time, if unless you had some of the top flight jockeys, it would be more like sort of telesales, really. You'd start off at the top of the page, keep ringing around the trainers until you eventually got a yes, offer up your five or six jockeys. It was a bit of a thankless task in the finish, but obviously I had some good jockeys, Willie, Dane O'Neill, Shane Kelly and whatever, and they had a pretty fair sort of a good book of rides to start with as a base. But in the finish, it was sort of getting me down and a bit of a thankless task, and I take my hat off to the lads that are still doing it now.
Right, so how'd you earn your money with that? Do they pay you a fee for each ride?
You generally get about 10% of whatever they're getting on a Weatherby's cheque. I know the fees have gone up a bit now, but at the time when I first started doing it, there was no all-weather racing. There wasn't racing in the winter, so it was sort of try and get what you can in the summer, and then that had to last the winter, which wasn't always the case. I was usually ramped up to the eyeballs by the time March come round, and it was a long process of trying to repay what you borrowed in the winter.
So were you a punter then?
Oh yeah,
Were jockeys good tipsters?
Absolutely, completely and utterly ruined me, to be honest. Not that they're supposed to give any tips, but yeah, it wasn't. I've learned the hard way of such. I've been through completely through the mill and through the rinser when it comes to listening to jockeys' tips.
Right, so then you went full-time punting.
After that, I was probably in a commission agent. That involved basically moving money for warm punters. Obviously, I was following in the live stuff then, and that was sort of in the heyday when we had some really good leads, when punting was really sort of a good time to be around the sort of horses. When a price was a price then, sort of thing. But of course, it's changed a lot since.
So in those days, would that have been teams of men with money in betting shops?
You used to have that. We used to have people up the West End in Chinatown and all over the country, and Betfair was very big then, so it helped because the volumes in Betfair were absolutely massive. If somebody came in with a big bet, you could just have it in one click, and it was really the leads I was looking for, sort of thing, rather than just getting the bets on. I wanted to follow in the live stuff, so I was always punting away doing that.
Right, well, so we assume that sort of people that are having the bets on can't get bets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anybody, any loser can go and get a bet in the high street or online very easily, but the ones that can't get the bets obviously have to come to the agents to get their money on, so it's normally quite sharp business.
Okay, then tell us about the in-running punting. You got in that quite early, I understand.
Yeah, they were good days as well to start with. I'd heard about the fast picks and this and that, and somebody, good friend of mine, said if you can get the codes off SIS, I'll give you a massive drink. That was sort of a bit of an eye-opener. Next thing you know, I appeared at Lingfield. About six of us, I used to go with my mate from Newmarket and set up with a laptop and a telly. And this is before they rented out the boxes there, the hospitality boxes. And I'd click away on something that would look like it was, but what it was, beat, sort of, and get myself 300 or 400 quid in a race. And I just thought, absolutely lovely. At last, I've cracked it. I'm going to be a millionaire in a month's time. And unfortunately, it lasted a month's time before they put a big spread in the Racing Post about don't play with the in-running track players. And we had a great month as such, and then it died off a bit. But I did it for about 4, 5, 6 years. We used to go to Lingfield, Southall, Leicester, Wolverhampton all the time, and just rent a box out for 600 quid between us, 200 quid a seat, three of us. And crack away, but there was good volumes in Betfair then, and of course things have changed.
Now, tell us, did you have anybody in your early days, any sort of punting mentors that put you on the path to how to bet?
Many, many as such, but one I can remember, a good friend of mine, I wouldn't say one of my mentors, but somebody that sticks in my mind. I mean, I like the characters in racing. A good friend of mine called Stephen Radford, he was kind of the best chaser I've ever seen in my life. I mean, if he got behind, he was capable of laying a short one to get out of jail. And good lad, good friend, still around now, going strong to this day. And he's just, I wouldn't say a mentor, but a character that I can remember.
Okay, so you're a successful punter, and you have been for a while. So what's your angle? Because it's very difficult to keep your head in front in this game.
It is, yeah. I don't profess to be sort of a genius. I stick to what I know, which tends to be the maidens and the novice races. I'm really not too bothered about the handicaps, unless I've got a real strong message for one in a handicap, perhaps an unexposed group horse running off, you know, the high 80s or something, and then I'll make myself a bit more busy. But I want a maiden where I fancy one, got loads of negs in the race, and it gets down to two or three runners. Strong message, get on the night before, get on early, and crack away like that.
Right, we'll talk about getting on later, but at the moment we're in a lovely place in London, but you're actually in Newmarket, so you've got your ear to the ground up there.
I've not short of tips, that's for sure. I've got people feeding me with all sorts of live ones, good ones, crap ones, nonsense. Most of it you can just sort of put your fingers in your ear and forget about it. I like a money tip. I like it when somebody puts their money where their mouth is and says, there you go, there's my 400 quid. Can you get me on this? And then I'll drink them for it afterwards if they get it right. If they get it wrong, then, you know, a lot of them have. I just block them. I don't want to know anymore. Don't call me anymore. And, you know, you've been fed so much complete and utter nonsense over my time. You learn the hard way, and you learn who to trust and who not to trust.
Right, so being based in Newmarket, do you have more of an edge on the flat than the jumps?
Oh, 100% the flat. Don't really know anything about the jumps. Don't profess to. I've got a couple of friends who get good messages on the jumps. I tend to rely on them for the jumps messages. I still don't understand the jumps form, and I've been trying to sort of get my head around it for the last 15 years. But no, give me a 7 furlong or a mile maiden any time rather than a 3 mile chaser on heavy ground. Impossible to sort of get the form of that. I can't work it out.
So I'm guessing then that if you specialise in maidens and that sort of novice races, that you're more of a, you listen to people rather than get your head in the form book.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I've got I think is a reasonable opinion on those maiden races. If they're unraced, I've got some sensible people in some good yards tipping up to me or asking me to bet horses for them as such. You generally know, but I mean, Betfair tells a good story now, gives you sort of a few clues you want to know. But yeah, I mean, the handicaps and all those speed figures and this and that. I mean, I know loads of people that just say, oh, this is top of the speed figures, this and that, and whatever. For me, put a line through them. I'm not interested in speed figures and 5 furlong, 6 furlong handicaps. You know, they generally always come up with the 5 or 6 to 1 favourite of the big handicap on a Saturday anyway. And I don't know, for people that I know that bet speed figures, when I analyse where their bets come from, it's usually them winning on an unexposed horse rather than a horse that's had 20 runs in the speed figures. So I am a sort of info man rather than a form man.
Right, would all of a sudden the ground coming up soft or heavy deter you from having a bet, even if it came from one of your lively marks?
Yeah, I mean, I hate betting on soft ground. Can't stand it. And heavy ground, do my absolute brain. So, I'll confess to that. Most people like to say, oh, I'll look for a heavy ground horse and whatever. I'd prefer just to kind of half walk away when it's like that. I've suffered the hard way, done my absolute proverbials on heavy ground. Can be ticking away nice and dandy for a month or so. Win, 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 win. Have loads of winning days. Heavy ground comes and I can do the whole lot back in a day, which is painful and heart-wrenching.
So would you become a layer in those circumstances?
Not always, you know. I'm more of a punter than a layer. I don't lay that many horses. I find that the value sort of lies in the punting, really. And if I click that pink button, it's just incredible how many times they just win. Whatever, whether it's evens, 8-1, 10-1, 6-1, I can take £20 off their back just by clicking in 100 quid on that.
Right,
so I'm a punter, not a layer.
Right, Martin, talking about clicking, I had a mysterious message last night from somebody that said to ask you, that they said, no one's quicker on the click to the in-running coop is that no, that's a big edge apparently. Do you want to talk about that?
When we used to do the in running, like I say, it was fantastic. And I used to go in a hotel room at Lingfield. I used to have the maintenance man squared up so you could get in a, it was 200 quid in a box, but I had the maintenance man squared up and used to give him 25 quid a meeting. He'd unlock one of the rooms for me and I'd just be in and out the door. So it got my exes down. There was only 8 rooms in the hotel there that had sort of the live feed in, and I was the only one in one of the 8 rooms at the time. So it was good days then. You could click away in 50 quid, 100 quid, a click, and get good money. But you know, the in running's gone now. Don't really do it anymore. Lots of the lads still do it, but you know, I think they're fighting a losing battle.
Now the other message was the non-runner coupe.
Yeah, the non-runner coupe. Well, that's still I missed one today, funny enough, but I'm not going to tell you which race I missed it on. But yeah, it's the firms don't like that. It's a real red flag for them. Yellow card as such, you know, and a couple of strikes and you're out. So you tend to have to get in the shops to do that, where you know one's not going to run. And obviously, you know, if they're betting each of two, one of them's not going to run. You can sometimes be on a 2-on chance. There's 10 on. It's a license to print money, really. So you've got to be on the lookout for it and be on early enough that you've got to have enough time so you can get round the shops and get on. But yeah, it's a good trick, that one.
And you must feel a bit sorry for the bookmakers when you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure I do. Yeah, yeah.
Now, somebody else that I interviewed previously that doesn't have any sympathy whatsoever for bookmakers is a good friend of yours, apparently, Dean Valentine. Can you tell us a bit about your relationship with Dean?
Yeah, I've been dealing with Dean and Simon for ages. They're both sharp cookies, both in the, been in the game for years and years. I must have known Dean 25 years, I should think, and I bet with him quite a bit now. Dean, he loves a pound note, Christ. He's hungry. He's one of the hungriest people I ever know. Doesn't leave much meat on the bone for anybody. And his partner, Simon, well, he's a great lad as well, and but sometimes a bit of a complete buck when he gives us a tip. But there you go. I've done a lot of business with them over their years, and they're both good lads to deal with and know the time of day. Dean shifts and warm money, so by rights they should have the keys to the safe.
Well, yeah, but Dean did tell me that they also endure some quite bad losing runs. How do you deal with them when they run up?
Well, you know, it can be sort of quite soul destroying when you have bad runs, short heads, short, for whatever reason. You know, everybody has 101 chances beat on them. I've had thousands of 101 chances. Like, you know, you go down and have a drink afterwards, sit down a pub, wander around Newmarket High Street, talking to myself for quite a while, find a nice quiet pub to sort of sit and talk to myself in and analyse it, and then only for a nuisance to come and tap you on the shoulder and ask you how your luck is, sort of thing, when you've just done your brain. So it's hard to take the losing runs. You have to keep going, cut your stakes down, and you keep persevering, but something will turn up to get us out of it. It usually does.
That's interesting, because your friend, in inverted commas maybe, that texted me last night said you're known to be quite an emotional punter. Now, does this affect your judgment at all, or do you lead you to chase?
Good question. I'm gathering I know who that's probably from. Yeah, I can be an emotional punter. Well, who can't be? If you're not an emotional punter, you shouldn't be doing it, should you? It's all right if you've got a big enough tank just to absorb the losses, but sometimes I'm sure every punter at their time has been on oxygen and you know, had their last whack on something. It gets beat a short head. Of course you can be emotional and throw things at the telly and snap the remote controls, and we've all done it, and me most of all. And I can, you know, I'm probably right emotional, but on the other side of the fence, when you've had your last few quid on something, a good bet on something, your absolute lot, and it wins, it can get quite emotional. You can be out of it, and I've been in it a lot of times, and managed to wriggle out of it a few times. So it's great when you're back on your feet.
Right, Martin, we talked in part one about you know, you've the various things you've tried, and then you sort of moved on. So how long do you give it before you can see that something that worked before no longer does?
Well, it can vary and whatever. Like I say, for 5 or 6 years I was doing the in running. Going on the road was quite sort of lucrative. Used to go, especially Lingfield and Southall. Southall used to be a great place for the in running punters on track. And you know, we would turn there, go up, be a little bit like robots, but if you went there five times, you'd definitely win four times. You may have one bad losing race, but you'd soon get it back. And then it got progressively worse, and it was, you know, the same horses are running there, everything was exactly the same, but the volumes in Betfair, the people doing the in-running, sort of got progressively worse. We cut down on the X's. We used to have a massive dish on our office at home. Four of us used to share an office. We used to get the codes every day. I think at one stage we were paying £800 a month for the codes, and in the finish you was paying £50 a month for the codes. So just like everybody had them. So every edge sort of that we had, either everybody else caught up or Pete, you know, it got worse and worse and worse. And I just basically said, this isn't sort of working anymore. The risk to reward ratio wasn't there, sort of thing. It's no good putting all that effort in if you're going to have a 50-50 chance of winning, sort of thing. So the edge went, so I sacked it off, move on, next case, what else are we going to do? And I find my edge, without doubt, is in the maidens, getting the price, but you're limited to what you can get on.
Okay, and we're talking now sort of around about lunchtime. So how much work goes into every day's racing? Is all business done now for the day?
You'll be surprised. Mine's done. A lot of it's done the day before. I have a rough idea of what races I'm going to play in. Just put a line through all the handicaps and whatever. Get it down to a few novice races within reason. I know my stables that I get sort of good help out of. I can look at the colours and just know roughly whether I'm going to be any, whether or not I'm not going to have a bet, but whether there's going to be action or not. Sure enough, that afternoon comes, or the evening comes, and something will get smashed, and hopefully I'm on that already, or certainly by 8:30 or 9 o'clock the next morning, I'll have tried to get my few quid on. And you know, you're limited to what you can get on, but the size of stakes I bet in aren't massive, so I can generally get my plenty of value on what I get in.
Right, that's what I was going to ask, because people watching this are probably going to be screaming at this. How on earth do you get on? Because you've got a job to get a score on the night before. And if it wins, your account's gone.
I've had hundreds of accounts shut, hundreds. I've got a few accounts still running at the minute, one or two still in my name.
Not anymore.
Huh?
Not anymore.
Well, I don't know. Trust me, I can't. I've got two Bock accounts. I'm not mentioning one. I cannot back a winner with them, and I deleted the app the other day because it's just a complete and utter Bock account. Although they do sort of go up quite early, but you can't. I'm a firm believer you can't beat a Bock, and no matter how hard you try, I have Bock jockeys, Bock trainers, Bock courses, Northern this and that, Irish, that are a complete Bock for me. So. I deleted that account anyway, but I tend to be able to get on okay for what I want. You know, they'll lay it to lose a grand or something like that, and you'll be surprised, some of them keep the account running longer than you think. If they may think they're getting a cheap mark for £1,000 sort of thing to win a grand or 2 grand, so some of them keep running a little bit longer than you think.
Which leads me nicely on to another question I got from your pal. I won't mention the name
He's
of the
making
firm.
Making himself busy, isn't he?
He is, isn't he? I won't mention the name of the firm for obvious reasons, but you've got what he describes as an infamous marker account with a major bookie. Can you tell us more about that?
I know which one he'll be talking about. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to mention the name either, but you tend to sort of, I can go on and I can bet things to win 2 grand, which is, it's enough for me. Not the night before now, but certainly in the morning. So, you know, I can have a grand on a 7-4 chance in a maiden that I know is going to start evens. But I get a lot of repercussions for putting that bet on from some good friends of mine that are bigger punters than mine. Because I've gone on to that firm, all the traders follow the account, or which they're renowned to for this particular firm. They smash it into the ground, and the bigger punter friends that I've got can't, of course, they can only get on until the last 2 minutes sort of thing, until the show comes up. So I get a lot of VRL from them for using that account, so I tend to stay well clear of it. There's too many eyes on some of these accounts that are the marker accounts, and you can have a bet for a couple of £100 and they get smashed to pieces because everybody's following them.
Well, I was going to ask what the biggest mistake punters make, but maybe showing your hand a bit too soon is that, is it?
Well, it can be, depending on really how much you're trying to get on. And if I'm marking somebody's card that wants a sizeable bet on, then obviously I stay well out of the way and I won't go on and have my £400 on at 3-1, something that's going to shorten it up. But if I get the green light to sort of crack away and do whatever you want, I don't have too much of a problem getting on. I mean, I'd like to get on more at the price, because if you have the price, you're in the driving seat, aren't you? But, you know, it's one of them things you can't, I don't, nobody's going to sort of lay you a grand at 7 to 2. You know, it's going to start 6 to 4. So that's when it closes your account. But if you're not too greedy, you know, and you only bet to win a grand and whatever, and you can do that once or twice a day or once or twice a week, it's fair. It's fair.
Are you still sticking on for commission as well for
other people? No, I haven't done that for a long time. I don't mind somebody coming up to me and sort of having a bet with me and saying, can you get me this? And I'll lay them the best price, you know, if I've been dealing with them for a long time. And I'll, you know, I'll sometimes double the price for them if I think it's good enough business, and I'll look after them. But no, my days of putting on, it was too many headaches. So.
Okay. So how do you manage your personal staking? Have you got like a staking plan?
Not really. Just depends on how well I'm rolling at the time. You know, I mean, I've done my brains on a few short ones this year. I can mention Charlie Appleby sort of thing. Great lad, great trainer. But I mean, this year sort of thing, they're all 4 to 5 chances. Most of my sizable bets this year have been on Charlie from Charlie's yard. They've all got beaten first time out, probably come out to be champions and win second time. So I manage my staking really how I'm rolling at the time. But it's you can't get on what you want to get on at the price. So there's no really managing it. You know, you just manage to get on what you possibly can at the time. And I don't think of... you know, how I'm going to, what percentage of my bank I should be putting on. Sometimes I've been having 50% of my bank on, sometimes it's 5% of your bank. Just depends how you're rolling at the time.
So are you price sensitive then? I mean, would you think this has got to be that price before I back it, or would you still go in? Is it hard to work out the true price of a horse?
I'm not really. I mean, I know when something's possibly going too short. But something they chalk up 2 to 1 in the morning, and you just know it's, you think, well, that's short enough, I won't take twos, but you know it's going to be smashed to pieces. So invariably it'll be 5 to 4 in the afternoon, and they're one on 5 to 4 as well. So it just gets shorter and shorter. It's hard to price up something now. You get a few negs in the race, you just know that price is going to go through. So even if you make your own tissue as such, which I don't, you kind of tend to take what price you're offered, because you know they're going to be absolutely obliterated. So just get on what you can, as long as it's not too short within reason.
And would you ever be tempted to sort of green up and get out if they shorten that?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, obviously, of course you do. You know, I can be holding some fantastic bets at 3 to 1, and I'm looking at 5 to 4 on the show. And when I'm doing things sensibly, yeah, of course I green up and get out, lay your stake back and put in short price lays in running. Sometimes if I'm chasing, you tend to hold on to your bets and flunk that they win, and then it's another tale of woe when they get beaten, caught on the line, isn't it? And you say, what if, why only?
Now, you touched on speed figures earlier. Are you a bit of a fan or not?
No, not at all. I hear a lot of people, successful people, put themselves up for speed. Everybody gets speed figures now, and everybody gets plenty of help, don't they? But like I said, invariably I know people that say, oh, I win on speed figures and this is top of the figures and this and that. And then I can sometimes see those people's bets, and then or the list of bets. The time I want on is when there's an unexposed one, or when they're back in a maiden sort of thing. The speed figures, I mean, not for me, I'm afraid. Not for me. I'm not one of those that watches every single video and studies every single bit of form and have, you know, I've got a good friend of mine that says, have you seen its last run 3 runs ago of a 6 furlong handicap? He's asking me that at 7:30 in the morning. Of course I haven't, don't be stupid. I think, you know, ask me about the maiden race at Wolverhampton, that's all.
Now, is it a hard, you say it's harder to win money these days, or would it have been easier to win 15 years ago?
Oh, Peter Cake, 15 years ago compared with what it is now, because your maiden race, there's no secrets now. Before, we used to get, you know, some bookies laying me paper prices even to win, you know, to win a grand 15 years ago or more when I was a jockey's agent. It was just free money. You could have 200 quid at fives, you know it was going to open up at evens. And now the same horses that were 5 to 1 are all opening up at 4 to 5. So the value, every bit of value has gone at it, but we all keep at it and we all keep trying. But it was a lot easier years ago than it is now.
Well, a lot of people that think they know better than other people say that it's folly to bet odds on. Now, I'm told that you were quite a good, successful odds-on punter.
My friend's been making himself real busy again, hasn't he? Well, who doesn't like an odds-on chance? You know, one of those people that says, oh, I never bet odds-on. I know some people that are granite, don't bet less than 2-1. But invariably, they have two bets a week rather than two bets a day. So, of course I bet odds-on. If I think something's, I can bet something at 4-5, that's going to start 1-3, which a lot of the time I do. It's a good bet, isn't it? If you're having 4-5 or 1-3 chance, look at Harry Finlay. I'm sure he'll sit and he'll tell you a few stories about how he's bet odds on plenty of times. I think everything has its price. Not every odds on chance is a good bet, but sometimes those maidens, 4-5 is tremendous value.
Well, it's one question that a lot of people say, why don't you ask them that? It's normally because the person I'm asking is a bit coy about it, but how much do you reckon you've won in your career?
Well, probably plenty. I should say plenty in my career, but I've spent it all as well. So I'm not, I'm one of them that hasn't held on to much. I've had a lot go through my hands, but I'm early 50s now sort of thing. So I've had a good life. I've done some good things. I've been to some nice places and I've been to some nice restaurants. So, but I've won plenty. I wouldn't say a figure of how much it is, but I've gone through a lot of accounts in my time and probably a lot of good winning accounts, 100 grand plus on some accounts. And my Betfair account shows a healthy profit. So somewhere along the line, I've won a lot, but unfortunately I've spent a lot going along.
So a lot of people, when they're getting into this game and they've got aspirations to be a professional punter, they'll be buying all the books on there, the study form, getting all the computer software, all that sort of thing. Would you say from your experience that getting a good load of contacts and using information is just as easy a way?
Good question. I mean, personally for me, I mean, I've been involved in so many quick get-rich-quick schemes and, oh, this system's working, that system's working, here we go, system's failed, now system 694 kicks in sort of thing. You know, I've seen it all and had a go at most of them. But it all comes back to sort of, for me, getting a good set of contacts, working on information, looking after your contacts, because if somebody comes up with some good leads, especially in those unraced 2-year-old races, unraced 3-year-old races, they're a good lead. I'm a firm believer of looking after somebody, so I'll go straight up to them, give them a few quid, and you've got to try and teach them as such exactly what you want. So I don't want loads of tips. I don't want somebody saying to me, back this will run really well at 10-1. 10-1 second is no good to me. I need winners, and I'll look after somebody who's going to give me winners, be it 6-4, 7-4 or evens. So a lot of it's about, you know, educating your contacts over the period of years or months into letting them know exactly what you want. And If it isn't going right, read them the Riot Act. If they still don't listen, bin them. But if they, you know, people come to me now, they know exactly what I want, and that's something really, really strong.
So do you have to factor in what you're going to give them as a drink when you're having your bet?
Yeah. Oh, God, of course, yeah. Like some of them want 100 quid, 200 quid on and whatever. Well, they're not going to pay you if it gets beat. So you've got to be having a sizable bet built into your price. Before, it's no good having 200 quid for them and 200 quid for yourself on an even money chance. You're taking two on, so it's a complete waste of time. So I do factor that in, but I think I look after people all right, sort of thing. So I'm quite a fair man. I like to think of myself as a fair man. So, you know, if I think they're due a drink, then I'll look after them. If I don't, then I'll bin them.
So how expensive has been sorting the wheat from the chaff out?
Well, a sizeable chunk of my profits, let me tell you that. I have suffered some complete and utter fools in my time. But along with that, I've suffered some good people. You know, some of the costly people can be really, really, really costly. You know, we've all laid the things that they say is absolutely useless and this and that and whatever. And we've watched them get backed in the betting and absolutely bolt up. It's painful to watch and, you know, there's no quicker way to educate yourself than losing and seeing your P&L at the end of the day, and you know exactly who's told you what, and it reflects in that.
Do you just sort of keep track of that, or do you have like spreadsheets and that sort of thing where you sort of know?
No, I've tried. What do you think? You've seen me interviewed for a long time now, or for an hour or so. No, I don't keep track of anything. I've tried all that, keeping track of spreadsheets and you know, stats. And I'm really not a stat man. And I know a good friend of mine is stat crazy, and he'll watch this interview and he'll say, "Well, you're completely bonkers." But no, I'm not a stat man. I don't keep stats. I don't keep spreadsheets. But in my head, I roughly know where I'm winning or losing, or who I'm following, or what yards I'm winning and losing off.
Okay, and I didn't know an awful lot about you before we did this interview, so one of my questions was, what are the do's and don'ts of form study? It's just don't, is it?
Oh, no, of course. You know, I'll have a form study, and if I'm playing in a race where there's a few runners, if I've got a good mark for one, of course I'm going to look at the second, third in and whatever, and have a look at the videos and study the form a little bit. I say study, I'm going to cast my eye over the previous runs. But I'm not a form studier. I mean, you know, most of the form book goes out the window, especially on heavy ground, unless you're a real form nut, which there's much cleverer people out there than me. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm the best form student in the world. I'm not. So I tend to stick to what you know. And if that's working for you, and if you get the value, pull the trigger and get on what you can.
Now, would you talk about backing in maidens, would you have a knowledge of breeding and pedigrees and stuff? Is that something you look at?
Slight. I wouldn't say it again. I'm not, you know, people will say, oh, that's, you know, that's by this and that's by that and that's out of a so-and-so mare. Well, I'd have a rough idea, but I'd be a novice at it. And I'm not going to as well say that, yes, I know everything about breeding. I don't. You know, we all know roughly what goes on what ground, and if they're bred on American bred, they're going to run all right on the all weather generally. Pivotals go on the soft ground, don't they? Whoopie do. You know, everybody knows that. They're no secrets. So no, I'm not an expert on breeding.
Right. So down in the nitty gritty, you earn your living from backing horses.
Yes.
What are the do's and what are the don'ts of backing horses?
The do's are find your edge, whatever it may be. If you're a form guru, stick to that. You know, plenty of people are good at it and they stick to that. Lots of people I know stay well clear of unraced 2-year-olds and maiden races. For me, it works the other way. That's where my edge is. My edge is getting on at the price, the early price, that I know is going to be smashed. And generally, I think you'll win in the long run doing that. So the do's are find your edge, stick to it. The don'ts are, I mean, you can't say don't chase. We're all punters chase to a certain effect. They might say I never chase and I don't. Naturally, I'm not a chaser. I can walk away, but it's never a good idea to sort of chase. Although some of my mentors, Stephen Radford and whatever, I've seen him chase and he's an expert at doing it. And generally, he's still going after 25 years. So I can't knock it.
Okay, any, you say backing in maidens, have there been any absolute disasters that you've backed, they've gone on to win the Derby or something like that?
Oh, God.
I remember Reference Point got beat first time out when I was a nipper.
Yeah, I once backed, I can't remember, it was years ago, and I had a fortune on it. One of Mick Shannon's, when Folkestone race was on, when Folkestone was still racing, 2-year-old. And it got beat first time out. I was balls deep, had everything I had on it. And it came out for the very next one, ran and won at Royal Ascot, which was heartbreaking. I've had plenty of disasters. I've had some good touches in my day. Backed a horse of David Simcox one day called Any Given Day. It was one of my best touches I ever had, sort of when I was up to my ears in something. That was at Kempton on a desolate sort of evening meeting when nobody was there. So I remember some good days and some bad days, but I've had a lot of car crashes and a lot of some good days as well.
Now, I'm told also, Rob, as well as backing horses, you like a punt on the NFL. Now, you've got a good record on it, I'm told. Have you got a model or a strategy?
Oh, God, the models on the NFL. I mean, how many times are you going to hear this throughout the year? You know, the big syndicates and the computer bots and the this and the that. Everybody knows it. So many experts on NFL, aren't they? Personally, I think it's a complete and utter lottery. My take on it is, and the experts will disagree, but I've been probably following it for 5 or 6 years now, and my philosophy is just back the New England Patriots every single week, be it flat or on the handicap, on the money line. You're going to be at that pay counter so many times, All the experts oppose them every week, but I don't know. I tend to sort of simplify things, keep it simple. They're the best team in the league, and they just tend to win every week. Sunday night was a classic example. First day back, and they won by 30 points. So I'll be backing them again come Sunday. Don't worry about that.
Okay, now you're in Newmarket. There must be a lot of shrewd people in Newmarket. If you can name any names, who would be the punters or the judges that you would respect the most that are active?
What, in Newmarket?
Well, just anyway, in the world, most people don't get to peep into the world of professional punters. So would there be any names that you could mention that would be...
I wouldn't dare. The real successful ones, I wouldn't dare. They'd string me up for mentioning them. I'm not allowed to be associated with them in public. But no, generally in Newmarket, there are some good guys. You know that there are some astute work watchers that I've sort of got quite friendly with over the years.
So they still have work watchers? I thought that was a thing of the past.
No, David Milnes works for the Racing Post. I see quite a bit of him. Tony Elves used to work for the Racing Post. He used to be the Gallup watcher for the Newmarket correspondent. Quite friendly with Tony, sort of thing. They're all sort of reasonable punters, but. The real sort of top boys, I have to keep myself, I'm not allowed to mention them.
Okay, very well answered then. Right, so finally, Martin, what would be the golden rules, the golden rule that a punter should always adhere to? This is your final word. So advice to anybody that wants to emulate you.
Unfortunately, we're all coming in a little bit too late, sort of thing. I think the golden days of punting are gone. But, and it'd be difficult, very difficult for anybody that's starting out now to come straight in and say, I'm going to make punting pay. We've all learnt the hard way. We've all been doing it 15 or 20 years, but we have experienced some good days doing it. And now there are a lot of bad days. So, I'm not saying God help anybody that's starting in now. But stick to what you know, try and find your edge, and work on that edge and exploit it.
Brilliant. Martin Raymond, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
New Betting People interviews are published every week at Star Sports. Exclusive interviews with the key people from the world of sports betting. Check out our full library of interviews at starsportsbet.co.uk, begambleaware.org. Over 18 only.